This is the Tame Aperture Podcast.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Hello, Hal, do you read me?
Do you read me, Hal? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you. I read you. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Come on down and jump some of this shit.
You'll always have that. Sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Welcome to the Tame Aperture Podcast, where we talk about all things movies from first-time directors, indie films, art house, and much, much more. Today, we're joined by filmmaker Michael DeHaan to discuss his new film, Yes, Repeat, No, Gabe. This was an interesting conversation, especially from a filmmaking perspective. Michael was very generous with his time. What did you think, just first impressions of the film after watching it?
Yeah, Michael was great. Such a great conversation. Very, very smart, intellectual filmmaker. And this film really got me inspired as a filmmaker to figure out how to tell complex stories. And that's what this is. There's elements of this story that are complex, but definitely worth jumping into and learning more about his vision and his direction.
That's exactly what I was hoping you'd say, because it really does. It is inspiring. So without further ado, let's jump into the interview with Michael. We are very happy and thrilled to be speaking with filmmaker Michael DeHaan, who is here to talk about his film, Yes, Repeat, No, which is an experimental film. And Michael, you know, before we jump into, you know, getting your background and everything, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the film. It's a very unique experience to watch, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think I'd categorize it as something like an experimental narrative. It's based on the life of a true, you know, historical figure named Giuliano Mercamis, who was himself an actor and then became an activist, started a theater company in Jenin. And it basically looks at the different parts of him as a human being, because his mother was an Israeli Jew and his father was a Palestinian Christian, right? So in his very existence, he kind of embodied this really kind of conflictual part of the world and lived it, really, because he, you know, he could pass as a Palestinian when he was in Jenin, and he could pass as an Israeli when he was in Tel Aviv. So I thought he was a really interesting figure to look at, and this film kind of allegorizes the different parts of his personality, Israeli, Palestinian, and then some kind of version in between, and puts them in a scenario where they're auditioning to play the part of Giuliano, but really a competition about who is the most authentic version of Giuliano. Is it the Israeli? Is it the Arab? Is it, you know, some version that's a public, you know, a mediation between the two, because he was a kind of a public figure as well. And it's kind of an excuse to dig into the, you know, the conflict in Palestine and Israel, in a way that's maybe not as heavy-handed as it would be if, somebody was just telling you their opinions.
Well, one thing I really enjoyed about it is, you also brought in his films and, yeah, and recreated, I guess, recreated some of the scenes. And I thought, yeah, that was a very interesting way to go.
Well, he's, you know, an actor. One of the things I thought that was fascinating, first of all, is that he was an actor, you know, a Middle Eastern actor in the 1980s and 90s, only had a certain number or type of roles available to them. So that was really interesting to me, because it says a lot about the way that we kind of stereotype Middle Easterners, or stereotype anybody in this case, particularly Middle Easterners, and what's available to them. You know, he would play Israeli IDF soldiers in a lot of the films of a filmmaker named Amos Gitai, some really wonderful films, really interesting kind of complex roles. But then on the other side of it, he would play, you know, jihadi number two, warlord number three. And I thought it would be really interesting when these actors were auditioning to play Giuliano, that they were actually auditioning with real lines of dialogue from his parts. And so I, you know, went through all of the films and really found the ones that I thought that were the most interesting, and let the actors kind of inhabit those. So the Israeli Giuliano is auditioning with all of, you know, the roles that he's playing, generally a soldier, conflicted soldier, you know, IDF soldier, and then the Arab Giuliano is really struggling to understand what are these parts that are being offered to, you know, him as a Middle Eastern man. It's like, you know, they want him to be a terrorist. They want him to be a jihadi, that kind of stuff I thought was really interesting. So we used as much of that material as we could.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about some of your, outside of just the film, but like, you know, those first things that you, it influenced you as a filmmaker. So in other words, like, what are those moments in your past, in your history, that made you go, hey, I want to make movies, I want to make films?
Well, listen, you know, it's not always the stuff that you think it would be. I mean, I grew up, you know, in the 80s, you know, watching Spielberg films and, you know, E.T. and Close Encounters. I mean, that's the stuff that really hooked me into filmmaking as an idea. I think as I obviously got older and started engaging with movies on a deeper level, what I was always interested in were movies that really leaned into complexity and difficulty and didn't always give you a lot of answers. Having said that, you know, I also really loved like spy movies. That was a big thing for me. Obviously, like, you know, these movies, you know, that were based on like John le Carré books or any of those like 70s, 80s, you know, espionage films. I grew up reading a lot of those books and I loved the kind of procedural nature of that stuff. So this film, as it turns out, is a kind of, you know, a hybrid of all these things that I was really interested in. But the thing that was most compelling to me was trying to make something that didn't offer a lot of answers, because those are the movies that I think are the most interesting ones. And when I say that, I think of, you know, I think of filmmakers like Mike Lee, who, you know, finds a lot of his movies in rehearsal with actors and is really kind of peeling back the layers of an onion and of how human beings relate to each other. And that is never clean. It's always messy. It's sometimes very often not resolved. And it just kind of, he just leaves these situations on your lap to just live with that level of complexity. And those are the ones that really stuck with me, right? As a, you know, as a film viewer and as a, you know, when I was directing a lot of theater in college and a little bit after college, that's the stuff that I thought was really interesting, is how do you make things really difficult for your audience without giving them an out, right? Or a, you know, a feeling of like something has been resolved. That's what's interesting to me.
Is there something in particular? I mean, so the idea here is that you, when you watch, and having watched the film, first off, I would just say, congratulations, great film. Well put together and just really interesting. One of the things you mentioned was about working with the actors. I'm really curious about your process around that, because this seems like a difficult one where you're breaking a fourth wall, or you're diving into, you know, BTS type footage.
For sure.
And then going into this kind of authentic, real feeling of auditioning for a role. Yeah. I'm just curious to hear about your process with the actors and how that kind of worked around this movie.
Well, I mean, you know, there was a script, you know, we started off with a script. Obviously I wrote a screenplay, and there was a kind of structure of these guys come in to audition and then they come back after being called back, each of them thinking that they have the part. And really what they learn is they each have kind of a piece of the part and they're still competing and, you know, arguing through what is the right version of Giuliano. So initially I knew that this process was going to be very improvisational no matter what, because it's almost like we're watching a film about an audition and a rehearsal. And some of the stuff that you're seeing on screen is us filming the rehearsal when it's not yet a performance, right? So one of the things that I, you know, we did at the very beginning is I cast the three male leads, Karim Saleh, who's Lebanese, Adam Meir, who's Israeli, and Musa Kraish, who's Palestinian. And I cast them first because I wanted actors that really had a biographical relationship to this part of the world and to the kind of narrative that I'm telling, right? About that's, you know, that is an allegory of a person's life, but really is about the conflict, you know, in the Middle East. And so I wanted them to be able to have a personal relationship to the material. Even Yael, the director, was played by Salome Azizi brilliantly, as she is British Iranian, right? So everybody had more than just the capacity to kind of perform. Another thing that I was thinking about was like, okay, I wanted three actors that looked the same, because part of this process was a kind of confusion of like, well, which guy, who is who, especially because, you know, when you see three bearded, you know, Middle Eastern men, there is a tendency to kind of make them become almost indistinguishable. And that's both because visually they look the same, but that's also like our kind of reductive stereotyping, you know, which is like, you know, not all that different than saying like, you people all look the same. It's like, there's something very derogatory about it. And I intentionally wanted to create that kind of confusion. So I cast these three men and I didn't know who was going to play what part. I didn't know who was going to be the Israeli Giuliano, who's going to be the Arab Giuliano, who's going to be the public Giuliano. And we did a read through of the script three times, a table read. And each time we did it in completion, like, you know, an hour and a half read through each time, took a break, you know, did it again. I switched their roles because we wanted to see like, what's going to happen when you have the Palestinian actor playing the Israeli? And what's going to happen when the, you know, the Lebanese actor plays the Israeli? And what happens when the Lebanese actor plays the Palestinian? Right? So it's like different things happen. And so we would have these conversations afterwards. And it wasn't until we had done that we really knew, okay, only Musa can play the Palestinian because he's Palestinian. And the reason that I thought was really important was, first of all, he's got a kind of authentic experience, but he could bring a kind of humor and levity to the part that nobody who wasn't Palestinian would have a right to, you know, find humor in any of this stuff, right? So he just brought this kind of natural sense that he had. And then in rehearsal, it was important for me on the, you know, we shot for 10 days. We had 8 hours a day, maybe 6 hours on stage, 2 hours of prep. And it was really important for me that they not be off book. I didn't want them coming in having memorized everything, because they're actors who are rehearsing. So I want to see them trying on, you know, the way they walk, accents, you know, try one accent, let it slip, you know, have a script in your hand. And that really made it easy to shoot that much material in 10 days, because they always had a script close by, right? So they would start to get off book, but it wasn't like, so that was really important. But then while we're shooting, it's like some of it is rehearsal. You know, the first 5 days were rehearsal. The next 5 days, the second week, was shooting and performance. But to be honest with you, like I couldn't tell the difference between what was and what wasn't. It's just maybe things were a little rustier in the beginning, and as we got into a flow. So a lot of what was happening in rehearsal was us trying to find it, and you see that's on film, right? And some of it is, okay, we yell cut. We're going to start arguing about the script because we don't always agree. Of course, when you're talking about, you know, Israel and Palestine, there's a lot of disagreement. And so I knew that if I had actors that actually had a sense of biographical attachment, that when we stopped performance and we started talking about the script, that still would be really interesting material. So we set up a situation where we had four cameras on dolly tracks and one kind of roving BTS crew. And the four cameras on dolly tracks were always shooting. Even when I said cut to the, you know, before we started, I told the camera department, look, if I say cut, it's cut to the actors. It's not to you guys. You guys keep shooting. We staggered our memory cards so that we would never be out on more than one camera, right? And we'd literally be shooting 6 hours straight. So when we'd stop and argue, that became part of, that was also part of the material, right? And some of that is in color, because it's literally like, okay, now it's really us arguing. But some of that is just, you know, arguments. And some of the arguments, you know, it became hard to tell which were performed and which were real. And there were definitely times when my producing team and I would look at each other and say like, okay, do we have to step in? Like, do we actually have to cut? But some of it, you know, I think they were just really, we just set up this like safe space where they could do this experimentation. But there was a ton of experimentation.
And I found that real interesting, because it was really cool to see the authenticity of these actors figuring things out and discovering as they went. Right. And that was really, really interesting and intriguing.
There's no way to write that.
No way to write that.
And you really felt it as one location, you know, one location, right. Everyone's there together for so long. Yeah. You really did feel that for sure.
Yeah, we didn't have, like, we were, I mean, again, it was like You know, the set is a kind of suggestions of walls, but we really wanted to make them feel like they were trapped anyway. It's like, you know, the other thing that I think we did before we started production was really set up the conditions that it would allow us to shoot continuously, but also not to worry about things like, oh, what if we see a camera in the background? Or what if we, like, what if the wall and the door don't look real? And it was like, okay, well, let's just lean into the fact that cameras are there. The walls are not real. You know, how can we use all of that? Because that's how you get a feature shot in 10 days, right? Otherwise, you just have to, you know, one thing that really frustrates me about conventional filmmaking, the production process is like, okay, we set up the lights for a couple hours. We do our blocking. You know, let's do that. Let's do those three lines. Okay, cut. Everybody know we're going to reset. We'll be back in about 45 minutes to do the, you know, the reverse shot. It's just like, there's so much stopping and starting. You never get into this really nice flow that you have when you're actually rehearsing or you're doing theater, where you do these long rehearsals. And I wanted to find a way to get to that, because I think you really find interesting stuff in the material that you wouldn't otherwise have. I mean, how many times have you rehearse something and by the end of the rehearsal, you're like, well, this is a totally different thing. I didn't see this at all. So how do you bring that into the filmmaking process? For me, that is now that I've done it, I don't ever not want to do it.
Yeah. Right. And you mentioned, you know, four cameras rolling constantly and continuing. Did that pose problems in editorial, or what were those challenges, I should say, that were there when you were putting it together?
We finished with around 250 hours of footage between the five, six cameras that we had going. That's a lot. It was just how do you even start, right? So the first thing that we did, you know, I had two editors, one of them who, you know, the process was so long, Alex Tyson, you know, the process was so long that he was just like, I have another gig. I can't keep doing it. You know, so he handed it off to Benjamin Schern, who kind of took the second part of it, which was a good year and a half. But first part of it was just logging all the footage. And what I decided to do, because I think my son had just been born, and so I was kind of homebound, right? I decided to become my editor's AE, right? So I was his assistant. So I was doing all of the logging, because I knew from being on set what that glance meant or what that extra sigh was. And I was like, yeah, that's it right there. Nobody else would have been able to do that. So that took a quite some time, and we did a kind of paper edit of all the takes. So we just knew what we had for each shot, because again, we're doing 20 minute takes. Right. We split the script up into four sections, and they were each about 20 pages. And we just did 20 minute takes where we would try to get through it and then do that. I bet we did maybe four or five or six times for each one of those. And each time it got better. We would, you know, do it a couple days later, switch it up with another one. So having all that footage and all these really long takes meant we had to almost cut it into shots while we were logging it, right, into specific lines, because really it became like, well, where does he say that line the best way? Even though it's a 20 minute take, it's like, well, we're going to take it from take number six, you know. And that process took a really, I mean, editing this film took almost 2 years, right? So then we do an assembly, which is just the way the script is written, and the first edit was, I don't know, almost 3 hours long. But it was also like, the script is written, you know, a lot of times you put it together and you're just like, well, that's the script I wrote, but that's awful. Like, there's nothing there. It's just dead. And so then it was like, okay, now we're really editing the film, right? Then you just start to invent things on the fly, and we just kind of took it out of order, made it non-linear. But that process was just so, it just took so long. And we would sometimes take weeks away from it to just take a break.
You right. have to. I mean, especially with something like this, I think you'd have. Was there any temptation when you're the AE to just start cutting?
No, because it was so unwieldy. You know, if it was a little bit, in my mind, listen, what I had imagined, the first cut of the film, at least the first act of the film, we were cutting with a deadline, because I had a gallery exhibition where we were going to show the first 35 minutes. And I did a set of photographs and a couple other things that were all based on kind of Giuliano's world and And so that was the first kind of stop, was like, I knew we had to finish that first act, which is those guys auditioning. So that was good because we had a deadline. So we couldn't even look at any of the other footage. But initially I thought, you know, the initial concept for this, which was a gallery project, was that I would have one projection, which was the performance, right, of the film, and the other side of the wall would be the rehearsal. Right. So it was all, we were going to separate the two, but that didn't really make sense once we started working, because the lines between that were so blurred in the production process that it's like, well, how do you separate? Like, I couldn't tell you what's rehearsal, what's production. So then it just became about, like, we're going to make a film. So we made the 35 minute first act, and then it was like, okay, now let's cut the rest of the film. And then it became, I think, about maybe festival deadlines. You know, then it was like, just get something for a festival. But I'll tell you, it's towards the end of it that it became the kind of interesting, because we got it down to like 2 hours and 15 minutes. And we're, you know, I was just like, I don't know what else to cut. And I'd get into these arguments with Ben all the time, because he'd be like, well, we could cut this and this. And I'd be like, ah, I can't believe you. Why would you even say that? That's offensive to me. And finally, I was just like, listen, dude, just cut stuff and don't tell me. And if I don't notice it, then it wasn't there. I'm like, so just cut it. He's like, cut it, get rid of it. I'm like, I mean, keep it in a pile on the side, like, because don't get rid of it. But like, just put it aside. And if I and even then, it was like, I still feel like I would love to have had another 12 minutes out of that film. We just couldn't find it. You know, still to me feels it's so dense, such a heavy lift for an audience, that it would have been great at 85 minutes if I could have done it. It's 98 minutes, right? So there was never a part of the editing process that wasn't a challenge because of that stuff, right? Because it's like, once we found it, and Ben really is the one that's responsible. Like, I didn't write the movie that you see, but it's exactly the movie I wanted to make. You know what I mean?
It always reminds me when you make a film and you hand it off to an editor, it reminds me of the Godfather line, look how they massacred my boy. You know, like, it's just, you just have to let someone else take it, because otherwise you're so protective over it, and there's stuff
there's like six other films in that footage. I mean, there's so much footage, you know? So I just don't want to have anything to do. I mean, I'm done, you know, it's like 3 years of my life. Like, I know it's there. I have the drives. They're sitting, you know, it's like, I've got this. But I just think it was a lot, and Ben really, like, Ben and Alex, and Ben at the end, it's like, I don't even know how, you know, we did these edits at the end where it was like, we're just gonna take the air out of everything, like literally like three frames before every word is spoken and after, and just to pick up the pace. And it's really surprising, because you think that's gonna feel way too fast, but really it doesn't. Right. If your audience gets ahead of you, let's say you're done, you know, so anything you can stay to do to just stay like even a split second ahead of what they expect is helpful. And so a lot of what we were doing was like, OK, how do we keep them off balance so they don't know what to expect?
Well, right. And Michael, I mean, you definitely stayed ahead of me, because there were times where I was trying to catch up, because it's so complex, and there's so much going on in the story. And then there's a lot of naivete on my side. I'm trying to understand other elements that I'm not as maybe aware of historically or culturally or whatever it might be. Yeah. I do have a question, though. What really was laid out nicely was the three Giulianis. Like, that to me made a lot of sense, and that conflict between them. So you have the Arab Giuliani, Jewish Giuliani, public perception of Giuliani.
Yeah.
The question I have for you is, who's the director?
Meaning, what's the function of that role?
Yeah.
Well, I would, you know, on some level, it's like a stand-in for me, right? But and originally, when I originally had kind of conceived of this, I thought, oh, the director should also be a bearded Middle Easterner. Like, what if you couldn't even tell the difference there? But really, the director is the function of the director, and I think it works much better, you know, with Salome or a woman.
Salome's performance was fantastic,
right? Like, just, I mean, and the accent is so perfect, and it's like it all just kind of fell into place. The director is really kind of a person who's there to kind of manage the things that I want to be able to do, but I can't do, right? It wasn't a part of the original script that I would interject, right? That was just something that we started thinking through in pre-production. I was like, well, if we're going to shoot all of the footage and everything in the round and we're going to see the cameras, why not have a BTS crew shooting us talking to the actors, right? I bought three tiny little handheld Sony cameras, or four of them, and for the actors, and I said, why don't you guys each take one of these as well, and whatever you shoot, we'll find a way to put it in the film, you know, shoot in the green room. And they were all resoundingly like, no, like, we need a break, because we're on stage, the stage is revolving, the cameras are just everywhere. I go to sleep and I see these cameras in my sleep. Like, we need that break that we get. So they didn't want to shoot anything. So there was a whole other level that we kind of devised. But you know, the director becomes this authority that is there to represent all of the things that people may or may not have thought or said about Giuliano, right? I mean, the reason that I wanted this kind of competition between actors is because there is so much dense information about the Middle East that is layered into this film. You know, this project is a kind of culmination of a PhD that I was working on and abandoned. So this is kind of the dissertation. So this is like 10 years of research. And also I was born in Jerusalem, so this is also very personal to me. So there's so much in it that it's really very easy to kind of beat people over the head with like information. So I had to find a way, how do you give people access to this? Well, I think everybody can understand three actors auditioning for a part and arguing about who's right for the part. And then these little cracks start to happen, and then the argument turns into something a lot deeper. You know, when Kareem is going off about, when the Palestinians came to Lebanon, you know, in the 80s, right? Like, they just kind of walked around like they owned the place, right? And that's not written in the script. That's Kareem talking about, you know, he grew up in Lebanon.
Right.
Like, he saw, like, the effects in Lebanon of this. So this is now, he's kind of exploding through the character into the moment on stage. And I thought, and that's really interesting, because then Musa's like, well, 80, like, is this guy Israeli? Like, what is this guy? He's supposed to be the Israeli Giuliano? Like, what? So I think actors competing is something everybody can understand. And then you can kind of sneak in. It's like putting the, you know, the vegetables in the pasta. It's like trying to get that stuff in there, because otherwise I just think these movies can be so heavy-handed. I think this is what I was really trying to negotiate, was how do you present the complexity of something that I don't feel has easy answers to a world that only expects easy answers.
Yeah. Right?
That is a very perfect way to put it. And you found a way to really illustrate the conflict, but also do it within one person who actually existed. Like, to me, the whole thing is fascinating. Finding out that this is a real person.
Right.
Who really has this background, and just like how torn you would have to be, and seeing just the personalization of actual actors trying to jockey their way to play the, it was such a creative way to go about addressing this topic that I've never seen before, and you really pulled it off. You nailed it.
I mean, it's not. I appreciate you saying that. It is not an easy topic to even touch, right? And for me, I grew up there, right? My grandfather is a rabbi. I was, you know, bar mitzvahed at the Western Wall. Like, I am connected to Israel in a way that is very emotional. But I'm also, I also moved to the United States when I was 8. So I also have a little bit of a critical distance. And I'm also very troubled by everything that's happening there. So I'm simultaneously very attached emotionally, but I'm also very troubled. And so how do you articulate what that feels like? Because I think that's really what life is about, is these very contradictory things that's the lived experience of being a human being. You know, I do things that are terrible for me, even though I absolutely know that they're bad for me. It's like, that's just how it is. It's not like it doesn't resolve itself. It's just the condition of being human. Or I believe, that, murdering and taking hostages is absolutely wrong. It's horrifying. It's unrepresentably terrible. And note, we should never stand for it. I also don't like seeing Palestinians displaced and killed in large numbers. Those two things are contradictory in some political realm, but they exist at the same time. And I refuse to say that I'm more this than that. I think that's the weird moment that we live in politically, even in the United States, where it's like, well, what side are you on? It's like, well, how about I don't believe in that. I'm on the side of human beings, you know, existing with each other, and I'm against stupidity. How about that? I'm for humans, yes. And I'm against stupidity, yes. And there's plenty of stupidity to go around on any side that you choose of all the many sides, right? So nobody has a monopoly on that kind of stupidity. Right.
That's beautifully said. And one of the things that I love that you do at the end, such a strong ending. It's really beautiful because if not tragic, obviously, right. Yeah. But it's a tie into the real story, and it carries this level of like, oh, this is a real person. It's historically significant. And the way that you tied that in, I just found that incredibly like powerful and kind of rooting it into like, because we had traveled through this journey, and even not understanding all the complexities of the characters necessarily, but we rooted in the reality of life, and you give us Giuliani and you tell us a little bit about his story and we understand it, and it's really sad and beautiful at the same time. So your ending was extremely strong.
Yeah. That last monologue just still, you know, floors me every time. That is Kareem, you know, just being brilliant at what he does, because it's, you see him, you know, he's talking to me, right? He's asking me. It's no longer, there's no Yael the director character and Israeli Giuliano, you know, who's played by this actor. It's now Kareem saying, like, I don't think he has an accent here, you know. It's like a very honest moment. He's like, he's trying to find it. And that, to me, you know, what was so like biographically, what's so fascinating to me about Giuliano is I watched a video of him kind of tongue in cheek, and I think it's in the end of the film, talking about how he was going to die. Yeah. And he's saying it like almost like jokingly, I'll tell you what's going to happen. You know, some effed up Palestinian's going to walk up to me and shoot me. And it turns out that years later, something like that happened. He's assassinated on the steps of his theater company, like sitting in his car with his like son on his nanny's lap or something like that, right? As soon as I saw that, I thought there's got to be a movie here, right? And it doesn't, it's not even resolved. We don't even know who killed him. We don't even know who they were. You know, Israelis thought he was collaborating with Palestinians. Palestinians thought he was a spy for the Israelis. Palestinians in the community were really offended by the fact that he's putting, you know, teenage boys and girls on stage together and having teenage boys cross-dress, which in the tradition of the history of theater, that is not a radical thing at all. You know, people have been cross-dressing as long as there has been theater. So all of these things were very offensive to a lot of different communities of people. And so who killed him is like a nobody. There's no conclusion. Many people had different reasons. But to take that from the kind of tragedy of what it means on a kind of social level to the tragedy of what it is on a personal level, that took, I think, somebody like Kareem Saleh, who to me is like, I'm just so stunned at his ability to pull that off, however it is that he did that, right? Because there's something so real about the ending.
Absolutely.
The acting, I was blown away by the acting, because we talk about this all the time on this show, is how difficult it is to be an actor. Yeah. And just to get to a place, but when there are so many complexities and there's so much meta narrative going on, I don't know how, like, I think there was one point where you even said you're playing an actor who's playing an actor who's playing an actor. And it's like, how do you do that? How do you wrap your head
because
around
Because that's really what it was, you know, and they all, I mean, they were all in, you know, they were all so open to the process. I mean, someone, you know, Adam Meir, who is Israeli, you know, he didn't always agree with the kind of lack of agenda of the film, or whatever agenda is beneath the kind of, you know, attempt to just present complexity. I mean, he's Israeli and proud of it and ready to kind of fight and argue about it. And if you know any Israelis, like, we're really good at arguing. And he, you know, so he wanted to be there because he wanted to be able to like speak for a certain kind of population of Israelis that he felt would not be represented well. So it was like he wasn't just there because he agreed with everything we were saying. He was there because he wanted to kind of push back. So he would, you know, and Musa as a Palestinian, you know, he has his own kind of reasons to not want to just accept the kind of complexity of contradiction. Like he has a very specific opinion of like what's right and what's wrong. So for all of them to show up so you know, monumentally in such a present way, I think was really, really impressive, right? And Salome just found a way to kind of manage that so well, and with this this kind of cool, kind of detached affect that gave her a lot of power, right? And made her seem like she was completely in control of that situation, which is exactly what it needed, right? And it wasn't, she wasn't, you know, she started the night before we went into production. I had a different actor that was cast who quit, who was Israeli, wow, who quit because of the kind of position that we were refusing to take, or the kind of complexity of what we were presenting. And 2 days before the shoot said, you've got to change some stuff in the script because I'm an actor in Israel. I'm a professional and I'm worried about my own career. By the way, she's not wrong. She wasn't wrong to make that statement. I just wasn't prepared to change anything. And so she decided to leave. And then Salome stepped into it because it was like we had Salome, like we had, you know, two actors that we could have cast equally and we chose one. And then that didn't work out. So it was like Salome stepped in the night before. Right.
Well, everyone did an outstanding job for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I was very lucky.
So where can people watch this? How can people feast their eyes on this, because this is
right
something
now,
to see.
Apple, I think, Apple TV, Amazon Prime. It's also video on demand on a lot of cable services, like local, you know, Xfinity or Spectrum. So you can find it in most cable services that are local, or if not, I think Apple and Amazon are the two big places to get it. I mean, you know, we got really lucky to find a distributor. Films like this do not, it's not easy for them to find distribution. It wasn't that easy for us to find, you know, festivals to be in. I think people get very scared of this kind of material, subject matter. And also because it's not like pro Israel or pro Palestine. It doesn't declare itself clearly on one side or another, even though the fact that we're working together kind of puts us on the side of, you know, Palestinians, because we're, you know, open to working with them. And there are some Palestinians who could never work with Israelis without facing real consequences. So it's a luxury that we can even work together, right? So I recognize that, you know, we're resisting side taking, but it's, you know, the fact that we get to work together is itself a side.
Well, Michael, I think that's what makes the film work so good. And I think everyone should go check it out on those different platforms. Just the idea that you're making a movie that creates a conversational piece.
Yeah.
It's for people to talk about. And that's right. The biggest thing that sometimes goes missing, it feels like, where we can't just talk through things or at least figure out other people's ideas and thoughts. So I think your film is so great at that.
And we don't know how to disagree anymore.
Exactly.
Well said.
Well said.
And that's not just there. Look at the United States. Look at, you know, the way the world is itself kind of dividing across these two axes. It's like we don't know how to have discourse around things that we disagree on. And that's unfortunate.
Complex situations do not have complex solutions either. Yeah. And I really appreciated that message of that as well. Yeah. So
absolutely.
Well, thanks again to Michael for joining us. That was super insightful, especially from not only just a storytelling perspective, but a filmmaking perspective. This was quite a feat, and you should definitely go watch his film, Yes, Repeat No. It's on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, I think pretty much most VOD platforms. You can also go to his website, yesrepeatnofilm.com, or you can find the links in our show notes or at tameaperture.com. Until next time, for Gabe, this is Alan. This is Tame Aperture signing off.
The Tame Aperture podcast is produced by Dutch Angle Pictures in association with Studio B Productions. Listen, watch, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and YouTube.